Welcome back to the show, guys. We got another special guest for you today. Welcome to the Pest Control Mainer, the podcast where you dive deep into the world of pest control and talk to industry experts who have turned their passion into profit. Join us as we interview successful entrepreneurs, share valuable insights, and provide you with strategies and inspiration you need to build your own very own multi-million dollar pest control empire. And we have a really special guest. And of course, we have my co-host today with Shane. How you doing, Shane?
I'm great, man. Yourself?
I'm doing well. Again, thanks for being here. And I'm excited for the guest today.
Oh, yeah. Me too, man.
I'll let you do the introduction and kind of just let him get rolling and, you know, tell us her story and we'll get into some good questions.
Yeah, absolutely. So we have Blake Black, not Jake Black, joining us today from Black Widow Pest Control out of Connecticut. I connected with Blake at the NACOA Expo over in Houston a week ago now. And we just ended up sitting at the same table talking. And man, sometimes you just meet people that are like-minded and you meet people that are trending on the same path that you are and you just instantly connect. And that's what we did. Became instant friends, man. I'm happy to have him on here and I'm excited for everybody, all of our listeners to hear his story. Cause it's pretty incredible. I'd call it from zero to hero story for sure. And, I'll let him kind of tell you more about it, but, Blake, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself? Go way back, all the way from basically the same story you told me in Houston, man, and where you're at today, and kind of fill us in on all the details. And when you do that, Jonas and I will probably jump in and ask some questions along the way to try and dig deeper on some of the situations.
Of course. First and foremost, thank you so much for having me on and the great introduction. I don't think I'm anything special. I mean, I'll say that first and foremost, and you know, everything that I've done is something that anybody else could do. I haven't done anything that was that remarkable in my eyes yet, but I guess that's just kind of the way I am and my thought process and getting started with all this. But I always like to preface with that so you don't think that I came from something that I didn't. I grew up on a horse farm. I grew up piss poor. You know, we never had anything.
I was on a horse farm
really?
Too.
That's funny. You don't meet many people that grow up on farms, but it just creates a different work ethic, you know. And during my younger years, I started to fall into that entitlement trap a little bit because I never had anything, right? So I felt like for some reason that I was supposed to be entitled to things and that I was deserved something, but I very quickly realized that wasn't the case. And as I shifted my mentality and my thought process, everything kind of changed. Around age 15, I was homeless with my mother. We didn't have a choice. We just kind of fell into a situation where we didn't have anywhere to go. We lived out of our car and then we lived in a house that had caught fire. There was one room that hadn't been touched by the fire and that's where we stayed, my mother, myself, and my cat on a mattress. And that's all we had for a little while. I found a way out of that by learning how to sell. So I learned how to sell myself first, which was we only have X, but I'm willing to work for the rest or whatever. And I ended up finding this guy to give us a chance. It took 3 pitches, but he said yes, and we stayed there for 9 years. And it was long enough for us to, for me, I should say, to get my finances right and buy a house at 23. It just started a ripple effect of different things that kind of happened in my life. And it all started with believing in myself because of doing things that I did not yet think I was ready for, which I'll kind of dive more into after. But long and the short of it was I was doing pest control, which was something I didn't even have any intention on doing. I've fallen into a bunch of different industries. I can't even tell you how many different industries. I've done flooring, carpeting, tree work, landscaping, and everything in between. So I ended up doing, I was doing finishing carpentry and rough carpentry that got slow at the time. And I needed something consistent on the books. And one of my friends mentioned pest control and I was like, I'll give it a shot, you know, whatever. So I went to a company. I was there for 8 months, which was a big name company. I then went to a small company for 7 years. And after that, I just kind of jumped and started my own and went from there. And I didn't have any funding. It was just, you know.
I got to call a timeout. I want to go back a little bit, man, because the fact that you and your mom stayed in a burnt down house and in one room that hadn't been touched on a mattress with your cat, man, that's pretty, that's when most people would give up. They would just say, listen, this is where I'm stuck. They'll make excuses to never get out of that situation. So one of the things I want to ask is, what do you think one of the most unique qualities, you know, about you that helped you become successful? And then talking to your younger self now, what's one of those pieces of advice that you would give yourself back then to really kind of say, hey, listen, man, this isn't the end for you. Let's make it happen. Because most people would use that as an excuse to give up.
I would argue that where most people make excuses, I see opportunity. There's good in every bad situation. You just have to find it and search for it. And to answer your question, the thing that makes me different is my drive. I'm relentless because I've never had an option. And it's created this hunger inside of me that I just attack. I just attack things. And I've always gone after things before I was ready. I learned a concept when I was 21 years old that was say yes and figure it out on the way, right? And what that means is you jump and you learn how to fly while you're in the air. And it's a very bad concept for most people. And it's a very irresponsible concept for most people. But it started with a truck that I couldn't afford, but I felt deserving of for some reason. So I bought the truck and I ended up in a better financial spot because of it. And I created an opportunity where I needed to make more money and I found more money. And it's funny how that kind of materializes to other things. So I guess the belief in yourself would be the advice to a younger self is take accountability and just believe in yourself and just go for it.
When you learned how to sell, what were you selling? Where did you learn to sell?
So my first pitch ever, as I was kind of saying before a little bit, was trying to sell our landlord, our old landlord, on us living in his home. And that in and of itself is a crazy story. But from there, my next sales proposition, which is funny, Shane and I kind of connected on this too, is at the time when I was homeless, I started playing a sport I didn't like, which was football. I had always wanted to play it, but I needed a place to go, basically go to the bathroom and shower. And it ended up materializing to me finding my love for weightlifting and something that's my relief of stress now. But we had this discount card program that was these little, like, you get 10% off here and 20% off there and whatever. It was like all different restaurants in town. And the person who was the runner up that year, I think, sold about 13 cards, and I sold like 130.
It's amazing. So my stepson's a senior in high school, and he gets the same ones every year for football or wrestling or whatever. And he wanted us to go pitch him on Facebook. I'm like, absolutely not. I said, you and I are going to go start pounding some doors, and I'm going to show you how to do this. And this is where you're going to sell them. Yeah. So he started like 25 or 30, or maybe it was 50 that he got. But he sold every single one of them on the door within like 4 hours.
That's amazing.
So similar story. And like I said, the hardest part is just opening up your own door, right?
Absolutely. I did the same thing. And it was funny because when I started, they gave me a packet of 20 of them. And I was like, can I have a second one? And he's like, go sell these first, and then I'll give you another one. I'm like, just give me a second packet of them. He's like, that's a lot of money. It's $400. You know, go sell it, and then we'll talk about it. And I was like, whatever. So with the last card that I had at card 20, I was making a proposition to the next people. I'm like, I'll be back tomorrow. And I was like, hey, man, I need another book. And I said, I want two this time. And he's like, well, I told you to sell the other one first. I said, here's the $400. Stop wasting my time. Give me two books. I'll be back tomorrow with them. And he's like, done. Say no more. And he gave me two of them. And then the next time he was like, do you want four? Like, just take all of them. So it was funny, but it worked out.
That's really cool. So that was your first time you ever learned how to sell besides, you know, trying to get your own apartment, because you had that drive because you needed a place to go. You, like I said, need to take a shower, need a place to clean up, which is crazy in itself. So you've been through a lot. It's an already remarkable story.
It's a blessing, man.
So then how do you wind up in the pest control industry? I said, I know you had a bunch of different jobs and you found one of the big conglomerate companies. How did you end up in that role?
It was just one of those things. I was just a tech. It was a general tech. In my eyes, I'm like, I don't want to go kill bugs and, you know, touch dead mice and stuff and whatever. But like, you know, one of my buddies was doing it. He's like, oh, it's fun, you know, and they'll give you a truck and, you know, you make pretty decent money. And I'm like, you know, I need something on the book, so might as well, you know. It was one of those things. Just kind of fell into it.
And so you stayed there for 6 months. And then what made you leave there? And And then you said you went to the next company for about 7 years, yep. Right?
So one of my good friend's fathers was working at another company that was a smaller company. It was family owned, been in business for 35 years. And which my old boss at the time now had said in a meeting, like, we're looking for new guys, new, you know, younger guys. Does anybody know anybody in the industry, anybody we can kind of pitch? And so we don't have to go try to hire people. He was kind of trying to headhunt a little bit, which is a good thing. And I actually do that now. Kind of. But so one of those things kind of worked out, and I got a call from the owner, and we had a conversation on the phone, and, you know, lasted about an hour. And then I went for an interview that was about another 2 hours, and he loved me, made me a really good offer. And it was great. It worked out really well for a little while. And, you know, then when I stopped seeing opportunity, there is when I jumped.
When you stopped seeing opportunity, what did that look like?
It looked like a stagnant future that I didn't like.
Gotcha. So there was no more growth within the company. So where did you start at the company? Where did you end in the 7 years?
I want to say I started at like 40K, maybe. I was probably 18. Yeah. Yep. I was a tech. And then I ended, I didn't make much more than 55, maybe. But I was, by the end of the company, I was doing, my end time at the company, rather, I was doing sales. I was negotiating contracts for them. I was doing basically everything and anything that I could, shy of scheduling and doing routing, because that just wasn't my role, right? But anything that could be done on the road, I was, you know, going to a home, selling things, fixing other people's jobs, doing service the same day, and it just kind of went from there.
In that, when you made the switch over from general technician into the sales, you had obviously already had some sales experience with knocking doors and selling cards for football teams and maybe some other things too. But did you find that same success selling pest control that you did door to door selling cards for football?
I found more success in it because a discount card isn't something that somebody needs, right? And I deem a service that's going to help somebody's quality of life, their health, and something that may not be done as well by somebody else is a necessity, right? So if I feel like I'm selling somebody something and it's not something they need, it's hard for me to get them to bite and to buy. Even though I was a young kid and they were like, oh yeah, sure, whatever, fine, it's $20. I'll help the kid out, right? But for something like this, it's such an easy proposition, especially when I see other companies that aren't doing it right. It opens an opportunity where in my mind, I shifted my perspective to I'm doing them a disservice if I don't give them our service versus the other guy. If I let them go with somebody else, I'm doing them a disservice by not helping them. And that is where the perspective happened.
It's funny. I hear the same thing come from a lot of the meetings that we have at Turf Badger and Pest Badger. So the wavelengths of the brains are still continuing to mesh together pretty well here.
I love that. I
love the whys behind the sales. You come into an end of your career with this company at 7 years, and you're seeing no growth or no future growth ahead of you. Take us through that process in your brain, how you decide to start your own pest control business or wildlife business versus just go work for somebody else that might have a better opportunity.
So it all kind of started as a friend of mine who I went to school with. His parents needed something simple done, and it was like $100 a month. And I was like, huh, there's something to this, right? And like it from there, it just kind of grew in my mind of like, maybe I should do something and create something. And then it was, but I couldn't do that, right? And being so young, I didn't have any belief in myself yet, right? So like, I didn't know if I could go off on my own. At the time, I was actually trying to become a cop. And I tried that process for 4.5 years. And ironically, I was exiled out of the process at the very last moment for something that would be very charged, so I won't say it in this conversation. But long story short, it was the biggest blessing that ever happened to me. So from there, I was like, well, now I feel lost, right? Being a young man, having no idea what I'm going to do with my life. I'm 24 years old, and I'm like, you know what? Let me just try this. And if it doesn't work, then it's never too late to restart. So let's just see what happens. And it just materialized and grew into something that was tangible and very quickly became something real.
Let me ask a question there then. Like, when you what made you decide to go start your own business then? Like, what was that? What was the, I know you were going to be a cop then. I was like, okay, I just have to go do this. What was that thing? How did you like start the company? Like, what was the first things you did?
First part of that question, what made me want to be an entrepreneur? I was listening heavily to this podcast by Andy Frisella, which was called the MFCEO Project at the time. Now it's called Real AF, but he's kind of converting a little bit back. But he was a massive, massive influence. And listening to his story was remarkable and just like gave me hope that, you know, it could be different for me and that I could actually do it. And most of my family is actually filled with entrepreneurs, but for one reason or another, they never got past a certain point. Not really, you know, and they're doing well, nothing against it. But like, I just have a massive vision and I see what people do. And I realize that what one man could do, another man could do. Why can't I do it? So it created an opportunity in my head where I was like, why am I settling for this life that isn't going to serve me? Why am I going to settle and be a 50 or 80 or $100,000 a year earner when I could do so much more than that? Like, what is my goal ultimately, right? So it was realigning that goal of and my vision of what I actually wanted out of my life, which was to help people. And what helps people more than anything else is money. So if I knew if I created enough money or enough where I was undeniable in my life that I could help enough people that I would actually deem it worthwhile. Does that make sense?
Yeah, no, I love it. And then, so how do you start your company? What's the first things you do?
It started on the side, you know, like anybody else, I'm sure I created an LLC and then it was weekends and then it was late nights. And then it was, you know, work 7 days a week for a long, long time. Cause I was still working, making all my bills work at the company I was working, 5 days a week, which was on average, like 50 hours, maybe 60 on like a long week, but, never really less than 45. And then I was working weekends for myself, which could be anywhere between 6 hours. It could be 8 hours. It could be 12 or 14 hours a day. So I was burning the candle at both ends, which was really cool because it gave me an opportunity to show what I was capable of. So when I did actually jump from there and start this business, which was crazy, it allowed me to work 7 day weeks, which I had to do frequently and still enjoy doing because I don't know. I'm just sick. I don't know. I enjoy the 7 day weeks, to be honest. Like I like working 7 days a week for as long as I can and then going and enjoy myself somewhere for 3, 4, 5 days and then coming back and working 7 day weeks. It's what works for me. I don't take weekends, you know?
So how are you getting customers at this point?
So it was all word of mouth. And this is another unique thing that I kind of started. I haven't done any SEO, not at all. I tried for like 2 or 3 months, but I got nothing out of it. I can count on both hands out of my 1,200 customers how many have come from Google. And all of them have been from in town. And it was just by happenstance. They happened to dig and find me. So all of our customers were all referral based, word of mouth. I met up with different people from, you know, the same state, but maybe didn't do the same thing. So we do everything. So I would talk to pest control guys and be like, hey, I'll take all your wildlife. I don't want any of your pest control. I'll put something in place that makes you comfortable that I'm not going to take it. Do the same thing with wildlife guys. Hey, I'll take your pest control. I don't want any of your wildlife work. I'll make sure they only go to you. And there's no way that we mess this up, right? And I'm happy to pay these people a lead fee if they want it. But most people just say, no, just take care of the customer. Or we bounce work off work, whatever, like however I could help them back or try to help them on jobs or maybe provide them with some type of free work in exchange for the service that they're giving me, which is giving me customers for free. So between that and social media has been like our unique growth proposition. And we got from 0 to 1,200 customers in 3 years by word of mouth and referrals.
That's really awesome. What do you do that's unique on social media?
Education. I try to gear mine away from sales and more towards the education. I want people to be interested in what we're doing. I don't want it to be so gross that they're like, what is that? But I want them to look at something and go, huh, I never would have known that. I never would have thought that. So I spend a lot of time making them. Like my post might take me an hour to make, but it's different than anybody else's. There's not a single business that makes a post like ours.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I mean, I've seen some of your work and took the time to go through and watch a bunch of your videos. So Jonas is kind of got the same thing. He's got a lot of really cool videos and some that have gone incredibly viral. And so I'm terrible at that stuff. Social media is not my thing. So when I hear you guys and see you guys do it so well, it definitely makes me want to try harder.
I hate social media, to be honest, so. But it's where our world's turning and nobody's going to your website anymore. I mean, I'm sure there's still going to be some, don't get me wrong, but I mean, we have literally a landing page of a website, which is a whole nother story in and of itself, but that we did have a website, but we don't right now. So, the social media in and of itself is grown us so much because it shows people what it is. And it shows people what the business is about. You know, it gives you an opportunity to teach them and show them something they wouldn't see otherwise. And we have a very viral video too. We have like 2.2 million views on TikTok on this one bee's nest removal. It's silly, but it's funny. People love that stuff.
Yeah, I agree. Are you more on TikTok, YouTube, Facebook, Insta, all the above?
I'm more on Instagram than anything, Instagram, Facebook. But, you know, the TikTok one just went stupid viral and I have no idea why.
So listen, man, yeah, that's 0 to 1200 customers in 3 years, I would say is pretty incredible growth. What did that look like for your business? How do you handle that as a business owner? What does it look like employees wise? And what were some of the maybe hurdles you had to overcome in order to get those 1200 customers serviced?
Something I quickly realized was I was hiring for the wrong role. I hired a technician first, which was a friend of mine, somebody who was great. I have nothing bad to say about him. We just decided it wasn't the best for us to be in a relationship together and parted ways. I should have hired an admin first. So something that I wasn't as good at was the background stuff, right? So I know what to do when it comes to a customer. I know how to sell them. I know how to service them. I know how to keep them happy, how to make them happy, etc. Like, I'm great at that. What I'm not great at is all the late night book stuff. So instead of paying somebody for 40 hours a week, it probably taking me 80 hours a week. Basically, we went from that back to no employees, from one to no employees. But at that point, I had maybe 400 or 500 customers in the busiest season of the year with a broken hand. And it was a whole long story, but long story short, I made it through. I had to do a lot of 7-day weeks and ultimately found the wrong people, which led me to finding the right people. So I've gone through, I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 people by this point until we finally found the good, like, core group of people, which now is, to answer your question, I have 2 admins, even though I really only need one, and I'll explain why in a moment. And I have 2 guys on the road full time. One is more geared towards exclusion and sales. The other one is more geared towards pests, but also has the ability, they're both cross-trained to do everything. I have another guy that'll be coming on in the coming weeks. I think he's putting in his 2 weeks this week, so it should be in about 2 weeks he'll be coming on. And then I'm hoping to get 2 more before the spring, because right now we're at a very big growth point and we're starting to get busy again in a very slow month. So it just indicates to me that it's going to keep going. Now, the reason I hired a second admin before I needed one is because I don't want to put myself in a position where I have to go back into that role, even though I don't necessarily mind doing it. I'm not as good at it. So if I have to jump in any seat, I'd rather it be in the sales seat, or I'd rather it be into an exclusion seat or a wildlife or pest control. I'd rather go back in a truck. And it's not that I'm against doing the admin work, because I could do all of it, right? As an owner, you have to be able to do it all. But I know my strengths and my weaknesses. And if I could spend $1,000 a week or whatever it is for somebody else to do that role that I'm not good at, or that might do it more effectively than me, and I can make 10x that in that time, I'm going to do that.
Absolutely, man. That's a pretty powerful statement that I agree with wholeheartedly. And I'm sure many business owners, the three of us for sure, get stuck in that, well, can I afford to hire somebody yet? And then you figure out, man, I should have done this a long time ago. I can't afford not to
Bingo.
Do this.
Bingo. I was just going to say that.
So
what does your day-to-day look like now? Like, what do you solely focus on?
Well, right now we're at a point where we're trying to get all our systems in place, right? So something I recognized about the business that was very heavily lacking was our systems. That's something that should have been done a long time ago. The price list, the, you know, what we do and why, the training material, the employee handbook, the everything that makes you an established business. Those are all the things that were very lax when I started, because I never understood it. I never worked for a company that had that. So I didn't know how to be that, right? So as of right now, what we're doing more of than anything else is trying to establish like that base, because a broken foundation, if you attempt to build on it, will crumble and you will have to rip your building back down and start with that foundation again. But if you start with a strong foundation, you could build the Empire State Building, right? And the point is, you can go as high as you want with the right team and the right core and the right base, but if your systems are trash, your business is going to be trash. And that might not be true for everybody, but from what I saw and how badly we were doing just day-to-day stuff of like, oh, we'll just figure that out later. Instead of just having a system in place of like, no, we service this way, this is why. Why would you figure it out later? Well, what happens when you forget about that? And now your guy doesn't follow up on it. You don't follow up on it. We dropped the ball on so many things that it created a need for all these systems to be in place. So our day-to-day, as of right now, in the slowest season of the year, we're getting all our systems in place. We're fixing all our traps, making sure everything works properly. We're getting our trucks lettered. We're getting all of our trucks maintained and all the maintenance BS done that, you know, is going to get done for the year. Organizing all our material, working on our storage, everything. Like, everything is getting taken care of now to prepare us for that inevitable boom that's going to come.
Yeah. Did you find a business coach or anything like that that's mentoring you along the way?
So I've had people that I've been fortunate enough to take on as mentors in some capacity, not business coach specifically, but people that have more knowledge than I do in one area or another. And I haven't found one person well-rounded for everything, but I found different people for different questions that I have, if that makes sense.
You built a good network around yourself, man.
Incredible network.
Smart.
I want to bring up on that same subject, Bob Scribner. Tell me who he is to you and how, what kind of impact he's had. And because I know that's kind of one of those people, I believe, anyways.
Absolutely. He's a very good friend of mine. Bob and I go back and forth on a lot of different things. I met him last year at a training, a NUCOA training. It was BAT standards 1 and 2, I believe, in New York. Signed up for it super last minute. Didn't even know NUCOA was a thing yet, and just kind of drove out there with no intention, no idea what was going to happen. And I was like, I'll just drive back. I don't have a place to stay. I couldn't get a hotel. Everything was booked out. But long story short, end up finding a place to stay there by happenstance, but it worked out. And I met Bob, and we ended up talking quite a bit about, you know, our businesses and whatever. And it was cool and refreshing to see somebody else that was doing it. Now, we didn't connect too well the first time we met, but the second time we met was at the NUCOA conference last year in South Carolina. And we kind of went back and forth a little bit more, see how everybody was doing in their business and my business. And, you know, we were at a very similar point, which was cool. And I said the same thing to him. Hey, if, you know, I know you do pest control and wildlife, what do you do more of? Well, we primarily do pests. And I'm like, why don't you do a lot of wildlife? He's like, we're still getting into that side of it and this and that. I was like, well, if you have any questions, I'm happy to help. Like, I did a bunch of this. Like, you know, if there's any way I could help you and your customers, I'm happy to. And if there's any work that you don't want, happy to provide you a lead fee, whatever, put a contractual agreement to make you feel comfortable in place. He's like, you want to do a skunk job? I said, I do. He goes, I got a guy, but you know, do you have a guy back home? I said, yeah, I got a guy back home. And he's like, well, I'll give you this skunk job. He just came in. He's like, just take care of the customer. I was like, let me pay you for it. He's like, nope, just take care of him. And from there, it built to a really solid lead and referral base where we go back and forth on things. If it's too close to him pest wise, I'll try to send it to him. But he always sends me, you know, the wildlife and bats and this and that, because he didn't want to get into doing them before he was ready to. Now he's at a point where he's going to start doing more of that. But it created a really good friendship. And we talk pretty much daily. Now, he's somebody who has a lot more experience in life than I do, right? He's a little older than I am. And he's been through a lot of different industries and a lot of different situations that has opened his eyes to different concepts that I might not be open to. So I get to learn through his experience as well as other people's experience that have been through things that I have not yet been through. So it creates this opportunity to bridge the gap in knowledge where you don't have to make all these mistakes and these very expensive mistakes at that yourself,
the power of a mentor, man, is incredible. And I want to back up just a little bit, and that I feel like this is a huge part of you building your business without SEO. I mean, there's companies all over the place just starting, you know, $1 million, $10 million that are spending just thousands and thousands, tens of thousands of dollars on SEO and Google, and you've spent zero, but you've been able to build up to 1,200 customers because you're not afraid to have conversations with people and you're not afraid to put yourself out there. And I think that's just like you said with this Bob guy, is that you put yourself out there with him, you talked to him, you figured out what he didn't want to do in his business, and added it to yours. So I think that's a really powerful thing that a lot of our listeners could go out and do today to make a difference in their company if they're not already doing it. Is just, if you're in wildlife exclusively, call your local pest control companies, see who doesn't do it, because they're getting leads for wildlife and they're sending them somewhere, and vice versa. So
absolutely,
I think that's incredible.
Yeah, I mean, ACOs too, another really great relationship to have. I've had ACOs reach out to us off of our Facebook and off of our Instagram, like off the content we posted, and they liked that we were trying to be nice to animals as opposed to just killing everything, right? That we're trying to do one-way doors or whatever. You know what I mean? That's another opportunity. And, you know, taxidermist, that's another one that gets missed. Who would think that a taxidermist would get a call about a raccoon that's in somebody's yard, but it happens and they're like, nope, call this guy instead. I don't want it. You know what I mean? So it's just, opportunities are everywhere. You just have to find them.
Absolutely. Absolutely, man. Well, that's all good stuff. So take me to, you're at 1,200 customers at the end of last year. Take me to what your plans are for this year, 2024. And what everything looks like. I mean, what does Blake Black look like 5 years from now?
That's a hard question to answer. I can give you a million different answers of what I think it's going to look like. But there's an old saying, if you want to hear God laugh, tell him your plan, right? But my plan as of right now for this year specifically is we're going to start doing email blasters. My girlfriend's very good friends with somebody who's done very well with marketing and email marketing at that. So something I want to do is have more like physical material that I can give somebody, tangible things like trifold things that explain, you know, pest services if we're there doing wildlife, or tick and mosquito services or termites or whatever the case, right? Just like a general overview of that, but also have a newsletter go out at minimum every other week or every month to an email blast, because we already have everybody's email now because everything's digital anyway. I want to start with the email blasters. That's going to be a big thing that's going to allow us to earn more business and cross-sell our customers, because second money is always easier to take than first money. So with that being said, I'd like to start doing a little bit of the SEO stuff. So I have a couple different people that I'm going to start working with this year and start to kind of dabble a little bit more in that. And we're going to create a budget for that. So that'll keep our phone ringing consistently regardless of what else happens. But I'm still going to continue all the other creative things that we're doing, which is the social media posts. And we've done charity work. You know, it's little things like that where you don't need to publicize it. People do that for you. You know, like I've done quite a bit of free work just to help people out because I thought it was the right thing to do. And I didn't even tell anybody about it. But I've had people call me because of it. You know, it's one of those things. I don't put that on social media because it's not like I don't want to be like, oh, look at me, look what I did. It's more so like just doing the right thing, and it always pays off. But that's what this year is supposed to look like. We'll see what happens. I don't know.
So tell me about the name of the company, and I heard some about maybe rebranding.
We'll see. We'll see what happens. That's still hush hush for now. But you know, this is where I can offer somebody some very good advice, which is make sure you go to a good lawyer when you do your LLC. The way I came up with my name was my last name was Black, and I wanted something that didn't sound racially charged that had my name in it, right? Because we're in the midst of all this time, everything's changed, and you can't use that word anymore, even though it's literally my name, you know? So like, I wanted something that wasn't going to be offensive or abrasive to people, but something that was going to come off nice. And obviously, I would love for that to be something in our industry. So I went through all this series of different names, and, you know, one day my mother and I were talking about something. She used to run like a widow and widowers group. So I heard her say the name widow, and I was like, widow, widow, widow. And I was like, Black Widow? Huh. I wonder if that could work. So I did a search of it, and nothing came up. And I'm like, well, let's try it, see what happens. I like Black Widow. And I was like, well, what are we going to do? And I was like, well, I don't want to just be pest control, pest management, pest this, pest that. And I'm like, what about specialist? We want to specialize because I think that we're going to make more money if we specialize. So that was literally my entire thought process of it. And that's what Black Widow Pest Specialist was born. And, you know, the rebranding may happen. We'll see. I don't yet know if it's going to be the right decision. We're in the midst of a little bit of, we'll call it an interesting situation because that's what it is. Because there is no infringement happening, but somebody believes there is. So I won't go much more in depth than that because it's still a current legal issue. But what I will tell you is whatever needs to happen, I'm going to adjust and adapt like that. If I need to change, I will have a change. I will have everything rebranded in 24 hours and nobody will know that it won't even skip a beat. But if not, then I'm going to blow up this way. So one way or another, we're going to explode the way we intend to. It's not going to change a single thing.
And one piece of advice that I'd throw in here for listeners that maybe you're going through the same thing when you're starting out your business, make sure, like you said, get a good lawyer, but get a trademark lawyer. Like trademark this logo, trademark the name, get it across the country. Like make sure no one can take it anywhere. Because I've had friends in the past build really big companies, very, very, very big. They didn't trademark and then come to find out that this small little company out of wherever has this name and they can't sell their business because the guy has the name and it cost them a lot of money. And so that small little company got a really, really big check because of it. So if there's any piece of advice for you guys that are going through this now, just make sure you reach out, find a good lawyer. In fact, I'll have a lawyer on here soon that you guys can all reach out to and to make sure you get everything trademarked.
That's great advice.
Blake, listen, man, the biggest thing that I've kind of taken away from having conversations with you is that you're at 27. You've been through more adversity and more hardships than people in their 50s. So I may have asked the question earlier. I don't know if we got the answer yet or not, but at 27, if you could go back and tell your 15-year-old self a couple of things, or if you could tell maybe somebody that's sitting in their same shoes, maybe a 20-year-old that's just maybe getting out of that type of situation and starting to get out on their own. Like, what can you tell these people to kind of help them, or maybe the same thing that helped you kind of through those situations and get to where you're at right now? Because the progression is incredible in my eyes.
I appreciate that. There's a lot of different things I would say, but above all else, it's that find the good in every bad situation. There is good in every bad situation, and figure out why it's happening for you, not to you. Because it's such an easy thing in today's society to play the victim card, right? Everybody wants to talk about who's a bigger victim and why, right? And that's all well and good, right? I'm sure everybody has problems, and I get it. I have a sad story too, right? And the realistic thought process to have is you're really not special. And I don't mean that in a negative, derogatory way, but like, your problems aren't unique, meaning that somebody's probably been through it before, right? So like, what can you learn from the problems that you have instead of focusing on, oh my God, poor me, why me, woe is me, you know? So it's just a perspective shift to be positive. And it's hard sometimes to see the positivity in bad shit, because there is some really bad things that'll happen in your life, but you have a choice in life. You could ride a roller coaster or a merry-go-round. You could be stuck in that same loop over and over, and it's level ground, it's all good, right? Or you can go on the roller coaster that's these high highs and low lows, and the low lows contrast and make those high highs worth it. And if you don't go through those lows, you don't get to those highs. So if you want what everybody else has, that's fine. There's plenty of space for that in this world. But if you want something special, there's no reason you can't have that. You just have to want it. I like that.
Love that. Yeah, it's a pretty incredible story. But I have one more question, and I'll say something. How did you find Andy Frisella?
He was referred to me by a friend, and it was one of my best friends, Mike, who helped me to shift my perspective.
Yeah. And, you know, I talk to a lot of people. I meet a lot of entrepreneurs, like, daily. And I can tell you, despite, you know, how articulate you are, you know, the things you say, you're a sharp kid. And you're going to do big things. And the first thing you said on the podcast is you're not special. Dude, you're special. I promise you. you're very unique. So take that for what it's worth. I see the fire inside your eyes. I can just tell, like, just your mannerisms, everything that you do and say, man, it's spot on. It's a super incredible story, and I appreciate you sharing it with us. But yeah, don't tell yourself you're not special, because you truly are something very special, and I can just tell you're going to do big things.
I appreciate that, man. I do appreciate that. But your problems aren't special. That's, I guess, what I should say. But I don't feel special, but I'll take that. I appreciate that.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. So do you like to do a lot of reading, or are you more of just podcast or audio guy?
I make an active attempt to read. I always hated it, but I have a bunch of books that I've gone through that I could recommend that are phenomenal in helping to shift your perspective.
Cool. Give me two of them.
The top two I'd recommend to anybody is The Magic of Thinking Big.
Love that book. I just finished that like 2 months
phenomenal.
Ago.
Phenomenal.
Yeah.
And I guess the other big one that I'd recommend would be Relentless by Tim Grover. That's my other favorite.
Yeah, really good one.
I'd love to add a third one if you'll allow me to, which is Your Next Five Moves by Patrick Bet-David.
Let's go. Have you read his new one, Choose Your Enemies Wisely?
I'm like three quarters of the way through it.
So we're a lot alike. I follow Andrew Frisella. I think I fall asleep just about every single night listening to his podcast. Same thing with Patrick Bet-David. I don't know that I haven't. I don't know if I have missed a podcast. Even his old ones, I went back and re-listened to. And then I'm usually at every single one of his events. So I'm going to SLS here in a month and a half. And then I'll be at his house in the end of August. So
really?
Super excited about that too. Yeah. So that's just things like I do. I have mentors too, even though like I have mentors that are close that I talk to on a weekly basis or monthly basis. And I have mentors like that I don't even know who I am for the most part. You know, so they've helped me along the way too. And you can just tell like the mindset shift that you had, taking account, you're accountable for all your actions, everything good you turn to positive. And again, that's just what it takes. You have to have a really good mindset to keep rolling, because like shit happens to you every single day. It never ends. And as you get bigger, the problems get bigger. They're just a little bit more easy to solve. Yeah. So what are the, I know you talked about it personally, what does the business look like in the next 5 years?
As far as finances or as far as...
No, it's just like what do you, like, let's just say next 5 years, what revenue benchmark do you want to try to get to? What does it look like? Like, what are your service offerings? Like, what do you want this thing to look like in the next 5 years?
So I want to take over my state. Ideally, I want to be a $20 million company in the next 5 years. And I don't think that's far-fetched if I do it right. But honestly, when I say that, most people kind of raise their eyes, whatever. Like, I should probably set a bigger goal than that. I should probably say 100 million, and I'll tell you why. Even though I probably have no intentions of ever hitting 100 million. It could happen. Sure, will it happen in 5 years? Probably very unrealistic. But if you set these massive unrealistic goals, right? Like even this year, for instance, I'm setting my goal at 2.5 million. That is so unbelievably unrealistic from what we did last year. We didn't even break a million last year, right? I'd be ecstatic to break a million this year, but I'm setting my goal at 2.5 because I want to figure out what a $2.5 million business this year looks like and build that business this year. And then from there, take those action steps and move those numbers up. Because if I fail, I will still hit a bigger number than I would have if my goal was a million. If your goal is a million, you might not hit that million. You know what I mean? Ideally, in the next 5 years, if I got over 20 million, I'd be ecstatic, but I'm going to aim for 100. Because if somebody says they think that's realistic, then I didn't do a good enough job setting that goal, which is why I just changed that number from 20 to 100, because you just told me it was realistic.
There was one topic that I wanted to touch base on. It's completely off base, but you just went through this project and just finished it, and you've been through it, I think, four times, failed it once. Was the 75 hard, I think you called it.
That you want me to talk about it?
Tell me about what it is. Tell me about why you do it. And then tell me how it helps you.
I can jump in on this one too.
Please. Yeah. I'd love to hear it.
I love this program. It's changed my life, dude. I've done it for the last 5 years, every year. There's a whole Live Hard program, which, you know, I could go in depth on, but I don't want to overwhelm the listener. So, we'll start with the 75 hard. It's two workouts a day. One has to be outside. They have to be 45 minutes apiece. 10 pages of a book, something to move your life forward, self-help development, something along those lines, a gallon of water, a progress picture, You have to stick to some form of a strict diet and no alcohol. And that's usually where you lose most people because they're not willing to sacrifice their booze for 75 days, which is fine. If you fail any of those things, you have to go back to day one or you straight up fail. So last year I failed on day 62 over a progress picture. I forgot. I fell asleep. Stupid, right? But every other year I've passed. And if that was my first year through, I would have restarted. But, you know, I got everything I needed to that year out of it. So every year I do this to keep myself sharp. I do it usually starting December 1st or in that month, that time frame, because it's the hardest time. It's the coldest here in Connecticut. And it's a mental discipline program that is designed to make you tougher and more resilient. So it does absolutely work. I could tell you 1000% for a fact it works. I'd highly recommend it to anybody. It's not a physical program. It is a scalable program. There have been people that were pregnant that have done it. There have been people in wheelchairs that do it. The whole premise is about getting out, getting up, and doing it regardless of the circumstances. And it teaches you a lot of lessons that are applicable across the board.
Yeah, so I've also done it 5 times, and I've failed 3. Failed 3 times and finished twice. The reason that I failed was not because of drinking. I haven't drank in, I don't know, 4 years now. The reason that I failed was that second workout in a blistering negative 38. I was like, it's not happening. I just started at the wrong time. So again, it's hard. I say that. It's not hard really, but relatively it was hard because of the time of year that I picked. If I was smarter, I'd be like, yeah, I'll start this thing in the spring and work through spring. But as you guys know, in our industry, spring is wild. So again, it's an excuse. Call myself a little B word, you know, but I didn't finish, but I've also finished it twice. And then I did the second session and completed that both times too. So
that's amazing.
Guess what? I'll be starting soon.
Oh, yeah.
But again, I'm on the same page. It is something that will change your life forever. And I'll touch base on that real quick. So I think it was 2019, I think, or 2020. I can't remember. I was out in Utah at a conference. And they were talking about, this is the first time I ever heard 75 hard. I'd never heard of it before. The group that I was in was all starting it like the following week. I was at a conference, like I said, and we were all playing top golf. And I had a drink in my hand of alcohol. And I started hitting the balls, just having fun, came back to grab a second drink. And what I realized quickly is that all those drinks that were there before, they were still there. And so I just took a look around and I was like, no one else is drinking but me. They're all still working and networking, trying to learn more about the business. So I put the drink down, went home, started 75 hard, and never drank since. So when I say that it changed my life, it changed my life. Because I got to this, I got, you know, 10 days and 15 days and 30 days and 75 days. And it's like, now it's a game. Like I just spent 75 days without drinking. Why am I going to go? Why would I start back over? So then it's like, well, let's see if I can get 6 months. So I got it to 6 months. Now it's a game against myself. I'm like, okay, let's go a year. Now you're a year and it's like, well, I could go drink, but my life has changed so much in the last year. I could never do what I'm doing now, the person that I was then. And now I think it's 4 years later and never touched a drink since, but that's how it changed my life too.
That's amazing. I think it's Ed Milet that says, it was either Ed Milet or Alex Hormozi that says, why count the time instead of changing the identity? I think it was Hormozi. He talks about changing your identity and how it shifts your perspective. Instead of being like, I haven't drank in this much time, it's I'm somebody who doesn't drink. And it seems like that's what you've done, which is incredible. And it's so cool that the program has done that for you, because even in this situation, right, Shane and I met over a night of, you know, quote unquote drinking, but I was the only one sitting there that wasn't drinking. And Shane had maybe a beer, you know, like, or maybe two, I don't know, but regardless, you know, he wasn't really drinking either. And we started talking more and we were the two that were like, you know, clicking. And same with Bob. I think Bob had one glass of wine or something, but the point is, like, if I were to be the old version of Blake, which could have been the person who was banging down drinks or whatever, you know, which not, there's anything wrong with that. Everybody's got their thing and that's fine. But I wouldn't have made the same connection that I made. I wouldn't have made the same friendship that I made. I wouldn't have made the same impact on him and him to I that we made on each other if we were both not, you know, coherent. You know what I mean? So I align with that story.
I wouldn't even like approached you had you been that guy. That's just not my speed. Right. So, and vice versa, had I been that guy, you wouldn't have come to talk to me. There's just no reason. There's no value that this guy can add to my life right now.
I'll end the podcast with this because, again, we're already over an hour, which goes by so fast. What are you most proud of?
That's a really hard question to answer because it's hard for me to be proud of anything. No matter what I do, I always feel like I could have done more, could have done better. If I were to answer that question, honestly, it's my ability to provide jobs for other people, to help other people, to finally have the ability to do some of what I love and what I want to do. But I'm not proud of it yet. I will be, but maybe we'll talk about that in 5 years from now. You know,
I don't know. I can tell you the next five levels too. It's kind of the same. Like you just, you get to where you think you want to be and then you get there and it's not what you thought it was going to feel like.
100%.
Cool, man. Well, thanks for taking your time with us today. It was pretty awesome. I love your story. I can't wait to have you back on in the future and see where you're at.
I appreciate that, guys. I appreciate you guys having me on and taking the time with me too. So it means just as much to me as it does to you.
Yeah. Any last piece of advice that you would want to give the listeners that maybe are just starting out?
Yes. Be relentless. If you're not, you'll get beat by one of us. And the point is, it's player versus player out here. And it's a very, very hard world. There's no competition if you're the best. But if you're not willing to outwork anybody else, you'll get beat. And that's okay. But you have to want to work harder and want it more.
Cool. Well, thanks for listening to another episode of Pest Control Millionaire. We don't charge any money for the show, but obviously the podcast isn't free. You can pay for the podcast by sharing it with your friends, share it with your family or your coworkers. Please like and subscribe. Give us a 5-star review on the podcast app. Any app you can use, your favorite one that you like listening to. I usually use things on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, but like and subscribe if you would, and these things make a huge difference for us. And if you have any specific questions, you can get them answered about your business or life by me or my guests. Send it to an email at info@pestcontrolmillionaire.com. And you can get in touch about personal business coaching and pestcontrolmillionaire.com. And thanks again for listening, guys. I appreciate your time.